Aloha, everybody, and welcome to another installment of the Pod Squad. As always, Chad Blair with Honolulu Civil Beat. And today, the topic is my favorite, politics. I'm finally having a post-election debriefing more than a month after the election ended, as well as a little look ahead to what the world might be like under President Donald Trump. And joining me today is an old friend of mine, Dr. John Hart. He's chair of the HBU Communication Department. He's also a local political analyst, I think with KHON now. Is that correct, Dr. Hart?
Or whoever will have me.
And John, I'm just going to call you John because I know you that well. And Penny Lee is our special guest. If you haven't heard of Penny Lee or seen her, she has been interviewed by the New York Times, Washington Post, MSNBC, Fox, CNN, Bloomberg. I could go on. I'm going to describe you as a political communications and government relations strategist. Her background also includes work at the Democratic Governors Association and some other things, which I will bring up during the course of this podcast. But I want you to tell me specifically about the company that you have now, Venn Strategies. That's V-E-N-N.
As in the Venn diagram, where the sweet spot is in the middle. So that was kind of the reason behind the firm. And we do work in two specific areas. A lot we do in government relations, and then we also do public affairs. And we put together and organize, especially on the public affairs side, where we run almost mini campaigns, depending on what the issues might be, trying to reset the environment or, you know, put in front issues that are of importance and run advertising campaigns around them. Kind of the whole advocacy behind it is kind of what we do.
Well, John and Penny, let's start with the question that I think is still on everybody's mind. And we've certainly heard a lot of speculation out there, but what the heck happened on November the 8th, or the early hours of November the 9th, by the time the election...
You guys were lucky. You guys didn't
have to wait. It was about 7. Zone. It was 7 p.m., I think, our time. I was actually at Mayor Kirk Caldwell's reelection headquarters, and it was subdued. Caldwell, a Democrat in a nonpartisan race. We'll start with you, Penny. What do you think happened that got Donald Trump elected president?
You know, I don't know that there was any one thing. And now that we've all armchair quarterbacked and looked back, I think there was several different factors that went into it. I think that the overarching was this overwhelming sense of we don't care what the change looks like. Mm. We just want the change. You know, Hillary Clinton, her campaign was based a little bit on the status quo, maintaining the status quo. If you like your health care, you get to keep it. The direction of the economy is improving, and I'll improve upon it.
You know, another four years of
Barack Obama. You liked him, you'll like me too. And there wasn't this overarching call to action. You had Donald Trump with his call to action of making America great again, and hers was her resume. Mm. And when you have that kind of contrast and this incredible force of personality, which was Donald Trump, I think that is the overriding reason. You can look at tactics and you can look at strategy and what was the impact of the Comey letter, what was, you know, all of the different tactics. But I think overall, there was just this overwhelming sense that people wanted change. And I think that the Clinton campaign was blindsided with a lot of others. You know, one of the characteristics or one of the things in polling, 63% of Americans found Donald Trump to be unqualified to serve. And I don't think anybody really thought that number being so high would actually propel him into the presidency. But you also had a deeply flawed candidate with Hillary Clinton, as far as the American people saw, high untrustworthy numbers, both of them disliked. And so just a combination of different things led to this unbelievable, you know, election results or election night that I don't think any of us had ever seen or anticipated.
No, on top of an election year that was unlike any others. Yeah. John Hart, your post-election analysis, national election, the presidency.
Well, like what Penny said, I think it's simply a call for change once you get out of the weeds. If you looked pre-election, the only person I saw that really had flagged this on the academic side was my friend Alan Lichtman over at American University. His calculations didn't really look at Clinton versus Trump. They looked at the ruling party versus the opposition party. And the indicators pointed narrowly, very narrowly, to an opposition win. So to me, it goes back to the very simple idea that every 8 years in a presidency in the modern era, the American people look to a change. The only historical exception you have is Bush Sr., who managed to get in on the very long coattails of a President Ronald Reagan. And I simply think it simply Obama's gravitas was not there enough, especially with a mixed candidate like Hillary Clinton, to pull the exception off. So every 8 years, the American people want to change, and boy, are they going to get one.
You know, by the time this airs, the Electoral College delegates will be meeting. And as of today, it seems like Donald Trump is going to have enough Republicans stay so that he gets the 270 minimum, and mm-hmm. perhaps the, what is the figure he's at, 306, something like that,
mm-hmm.
Barring some change. There mm-hmm. are people that are balking, even in our own delegation here, the four Democrats for Clinton, say, we want to see the CIA report.
Sure.
Penny used to work for Harry Reid when he was majority leader in mm-hmm. the U.S. Senate, and just the other day, of course, he's retiring now,
yeah.
he brought up that the Russian hacking or interference mm-hmm. that the CIA has reported was on par with the September 11th terrorist mm-hmm. attacks and the Watergate crisis under Richard Nixon. That's quite astounding. Do you think it rises to that level?
I obviously haven't seen the full intel briefings, but from what I know and from people that have been in the room, and this was going back into October, there was grave concern at that level. The widespread, the incredible, devastating impact that just the sheer fact of Russia being able to hack and the pervasiveness in which they were able to infiltrate. And you also had candidate Trump at the time calling for Russia to go in and hack. So you have a presidential candidate basically saying, you know, I invite a foreign government to come in and disrupt and to hack and to, you know, infiltrate and to have a large impact upon our own elections. I welcome that. And then you actually had it happening. So, you know, I know Senator Reid is pushing very much and would like the members of the Electoral College to get the full briefing for them to understand. And from what, in talking with Intel friends of mine that are in the Intel community, it is, as you know, in their own words, it is very scary what is occurring, and more information and action needs to occur, and it can't be dismissed with a 141 character tweet by Donald Trump.
Which Trump has done repeatedly, dismissed this, even as his new Secretary of State pick, close ties with Vladimir Putin, and a number of other things. John, your take on this. I mean, if it does turn out, and the president had asked for a report by the time he leaves office, before Trump is sworn in, if it does come out that it's fairly conclusive that the CIA has evidence, and maybe other intelligence agencies, that Russia directly interfered, can you change this? I mean, how could you call Trump a legitimate president?
Well, I don't think you can change the results of the presidency. I don't think there's any evidence yet that what was leaked wasn't true, which is something to think about, as heinous as how we got the information is. The Electoral College was set up to intervene in extremely dangerous situations. Whether or not this meets that bar is something that the electors don't seem to agree with.
There seems to be a lot of division. Of course, as I indicated, we'll know probably by Monday. Even if for some reason Trump cannot get 270, it goes in the U.S. House of Representatives. In my understanding, it's a GOP-controlled
right.
chamber, and I think it's one vote per state, if I remember
correct.
Correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, well, do you have to then get 26? We're probably not going to get there
yeah.
yet. It's not going to be like John Quincy Adams and Andrew Jackson back
right.
in the 1840s or 20s, whenever
well,
it was.
Well, if it goes to the House, let's be real. Mike Pence is president.
I mean,
you know, the Democrats are not going to get a candidate out of this. It's just a matter of which Republican ends up in
But let me ask you this. Penny, Hillary Clinton got nearly 3 million more votes mm-hmm. than Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
That's more than Obama had,
yeah.
margin over Mitt Romney
right.
4 years ago. An astounding number of people voted mm-hmm. for her. And yet, she lost the Electoral College.
Right.
Why the heck do we have the Electoral College still in place? This is not the first time
sure.
this has happened. Yeah. Al Gore.
We're pretty good at it.
Yes.
Us Democrats are pretty good at winning
exactly.
the popular.
In fact, one of your yeah. former bosses is Ed Rendell, who,
yeah.
if I remember correctly, former governor of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't he was on the Al Gore campaign?
Yes,
back
yes.
in
we worked on that together. So,
yeah.
As we all know, I mean, the reason is because if you didn't have the Electoral College, You would literally have candidates only contesting in California, in New York, and maybe Florida, Texas.
Right.
Perhaps fifth row in Illinois. But that's about it.
This is if we did not
have
the Electoral
College.
You
would go where the population is. And obviously you're seeing that. And so, you know, a large swath of America wouldn't be able to, you know, wouldn't see the president. They wouldn't be campaigning. They wouldn't be asking for their vote. They'd almost just, you know, be a forgotten part of it. So I think that, you know, I'm still supportive of the Electoral College, even though obviously I would like to have seen some of the outcomes come be different. But it allows a fuller and more robust and fulsome participation by all of America
because of it. And John, I'm going to ask you as well about your input on the Electoral College, but let me just throw this out at you. You say that, let's say that we didn't have it, the candidates would only concentrate on certain states. But in fact, don't they already concentrate on certain states, the swing states, which does include Florida, but particularly Ohio and Colorado and so forth. And that's where they went. They never came to Hawaii, I can tell you that.
Yeah, and they never went to Alaska,
right.
My home state. Yes, you know, any given period, there's anywhere from 5 to 18 swing states. And this year, you know, you saw what was up was down and what was down was up. A real kind of reversal, and I think that's why the polling was so different, is because the models were so different of who was going to be showing up to vote. Democratic voters, I mean, candidates have always done better with white working class, male, non-college educated. You know, that was reversed, and Democrats have always lost college-educated women. For the first time, we won college-educated women. So you had some different constituencies throughout the country, you know, show alliances or allegiances to different, which caused people to have to vote. In looking backwards, the Clinton campaign, one of the fundamental tactics was, from the beginning, they made the decision that it was going to be a base election, that if all they did was turn out their base, guarantee that 270, everything else was going to be gravy. But come August, they started having, you know, it was Trump. I think they were feeling a lot more buoyed. They were feeling a lot more positive, opening up offices in Arizona and Utah.
I'm
not going back again to securing that 270. And so you did see an expansion. They moved from base to expansion, and I think to their own detriment.
It was Wisconsin and Michigan and, frankly, Pennsylvania,
and
right?
Pennsylvania, yeah.
That really were the difference. John?
Yeah.
Well, my experience has been people's views on the Constitution are convenient. In other words, if you go back and you look at the pre-election chatter on the Electoral College, and a lot of people thought that it was going to be a possible scenario of Trump winning the popular vote and Hillary winning the Electoral College, Trump's people were all in favor of abolishing the Electoral College. So
they had lawyers ready.
Absolutely. So it's been my experience, like it or not, that our stance on a constitutional issue usually is based on how it immediately affects what we want to do.
Okay. Final questions for you. There's talk that the press corps, the White House treatment of the media is going to be different under President Trump. And of course, as we all know, he's using Twitter as his contact.
Yeah.
He hasn't had a press conference yet. Give me a sense of your concerns about media access, particularly the way the media has been so
demonized.
Denigrated, tremendously, even blamed. What do you foresee happening? Because it is the fourth estate, and people like me who are journalists think it's still important. But your thoughts.
And I was a political science journalism major, so I had a really quick stint in journalism and then went to the political science route. I think it's dangerous. I think the precedent that President-elect Trump is setting to delegitimize press at such a high level. Now, there might be disagreements. I mean, look, I've worked for candidates and others and gotten very mad at the Fourth Estate and journalist. But for the sake of the democracy, to have that check has to be in place. And so the notion that we're only going to have friendly news outlets at the White House or only going on one particular channel, you know, candidate Trump just pillared Hillary for not having a press conference, and now the same is in reverse, and he hasn't been off of Fox News anywhere but Fox News since almost June. So I think it's scary. I think it's dangerous, and I think that, you know, they're going to probably start to cut off more and more access, which unfortunately, also with the demonization of it, when there becomes a legitimate story, everyone just will dismiss it and say, oh, that's just the evil media. And so we're going to have this real hard time arbitrating what is truth, which I think is, you know, it's going to be a real challenge
Facts
for the next 4 years.
Facts don't matter.
Facts
Penny.
Don't matter, right? Exactly. conflicts don't occur, you know.
John, real quickly, the media and the Trump.
Well, yeah, remember Stephen Colbert and Truthiness?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Mamie Life really does imitate art.
Well said. We're going to have to stop there, but I want to thank Penny Lee of Venn Strategies and John Hart, chair of the HBU Communication Department. And I'm going to go ahead and use that word, pundit. But also my friend John and Penny, thanks so much for joining us today. And for you all, visit us at civilbeat.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. For the Pod Squad and Honolulu Civil Beat, I'm Chad Blair. Take care and aloha.